stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortez Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Scoop, the Rick Hansen Foundation is celebrating the launch of the organization's newest venture, their Accessible Outdoors program. Danny Nesvarandi at CJSF in Burnaby has more. The Métis dance troupe Asham Stompers is coming to Prince George May 23rd to 25th. Ian Gregg at CIFA Radio in PG gets us prepped. A new festival might be coming to Nanaimo called Sunk City to fill in while Backyard Fest is on hiatus. Lauren McKenzie at CHLY tells us more. And at CICK News in Smithers, Pam Hassan chats with research climatologist Vanessa Ford about her latest work in the Skeena region. I'm Daniel Messick. You're listening to The Scoop.
Reporting from Richmond, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Established in 1988, for over 35 years, the organization has worked to raise awareness, change attitudes, and remove barriers for people with disabilities. On May 8th, the Rick Hansen Foundation held an event at the Gulf of Georgia Cannery National Historic Site in Richmond, BC, celebrating the launch of the organization's newest venture, their Accessible Outdoors program. The newly launched program aims to make outdoor activities more accessible for people living with disabilities by inspiring new projects, initiatives, and policies that enable access and inclusion. Their first goal? To make the ocean a place that is accessible for all. During the event, Rick Hansen unveiled the Everyone Everywhere, a boat that takes into consideration the safety and comfort needs of people living with disabilities. The Rick Hansen Foundation identified boating as something that is often inaccessible for people living with disabilities due to a lack of design consideration for these populations. CJSF was able to take a tour of the vessel, where Hansen spoke at length of the new opportunities that it provides for people living with disabilities.
Yeah, the reason we wanted to start in the marine environment was because, first of all, that's one of the biggest barriers out there. Is if almost every marina that exists, every boat that's being built, is actually not accessible. And so when you have a marina, a host marina like the Steveston Harbor Authority, that's actually thinking about accessibility, it's a shining example of what could be everywhere. The boats that are being built are built in general without accessibility in mind, and they're hard to adapt even if they, they're purchased by someone and someone has a stroke or an injury. They really feel like they actually have to get rid of the boat and maybe not even be able to participate again. And by the way, you know, accessibility is one of the fastest segments of the global tourism industry. And so when we bring people here to British Columbia and they go out whale watching, they go out, you know, sport fishing, they do ecotourism, we want them to be able to participate. And it should be good for Canada to be able to actually offer this and really attract more people to be here.
Hansen then went on to give a more detailed explanation of the possibilities that this boat provides.
In this boat, we want to be able to have the back section, which is typically, it's the working section. It's where you can actually go out and be a researcher and work on conservation. You can clean up, you know, ghost nets in the river that don't need to be there and put it into recycling, or you can work on habitat or do sonar assessment or tag fish and monitor them and release them, or you can be a recreational fisherman or fisherwoman. And so these are the opportunities in the back, where you can be outdoors doing a cruise and doing an ecotourism example, where a First Nations leader can be a host and they can actually have a disability and actually be on the water for the first time in their entire life, talking about their heritage and how important the river is to their nation, and and to all of us, and how we have to make sure that it's healthy so that it's sustainable for the future.
We then had the opportunity to go onto the vessel, where Hansen spoke on how the adaptable design of this boat can hopefully inspire other manufacturers to take note of these design choices.
You make it general for, for everybody, and then you can, if you put anything unique that's kind of fixed, you know, you can actually, once you have the floor plan, you can easily adapt it. You can move it around or take it if somebody has different needs, or, like, for instance, if I purchase this and I was able-bodied, if I put, like, fixed seats in, then, you know, the boat has been built so that if someone came along and they were in a wheelchair, they could take the seats out, put the lift in, and it would be a simple adaptation because there's no structural barrier in the way. But if it was structurally changed, you know, where that open floor plan didn't exist, then it would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and it would be prohibitive to make a change. We've come a long way in 40 years of everybody working towards making change, and there's a lot to celebrate, and I'm incredibly grateful for the many champions and people who have actually taken up that challenge and implemented solutions. But it's also a reality check of, you know, the fact that we've got a long way to go. So this is an example of yet another barrier being removed. So let's just keep going. We're not over.
For those wanting to learn more about the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessible Outdoors program, as well as how to book an appointment on the Everyone Everywhere vessel, you can go to rickhansen.com. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
Here we are on location just off Queensway in historic South Fort George District in Prince George Clayliton A at the newly minted office of the Prince George Métis Community Association. And speaking with us today, we have both
Sylvia DeRocher, I'm the president for the Prince George Métis Community Association.
And
Denise Porter, a Métis citizen and office worker.
And coming to town late this May, 23rd to 25th, is a dance ensemble, the Asham Stompers. And can you tell me a little bit about this event, where the group is coming from, and really why we should be excited? Because this is the first time this group has come to Prince George.
Yes, we're very excited about this. Our community has been wondering how we can bring our Métis culture to Prince George, and since we have always been known as the invisible people, now it's time for us to become visible. And the Asham Stompers are very critical to our culture as they show the dance and the music. And they also hail from our homeland, which is in Manitoba, near the Red River Valley. That is our home base. And that's where they're from. And so they're bringing our community together, helping to bring our community alive. And not only that, but showcasing an integral part of our culture, which is the music and the dance and the language. It's time that we put ourselves out there and let everybody know that we're still here. Yes, and we want to have some fun. They're fun, and we want to have some fun, and we want people in Prince George to have fun, to come in and just get a little taste of who we are and that we are actually a fun people.
It is nice to have some levity, especially as we're emerging out of a winter, moving into the spring. The summer's knocking on the door. It is time to dance. But what style of dance are the Asham Stompers? What do they bring to the stage?
They bring, of course, the Métis jigging. They also bring square dancing and all of the other little dances that we do as Métis people. Some of that we have been inherited from our Irish cousins, some from our First Nations cousins, but it's a lot of jigging, and it's a different style of jigging and fiddle playing. Very, very important. You can't have the jigging without the fiddle playing, and together they are amazing.
So is there also a live band accompanying these dancers for the event?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. They're bringing their whole ensemble, and I believe it's a group of 15. And, yeah, they bring their own music as well, because that's who they have been practicing their dancing with. And because of fiddle music, it can change from fiddler to fiddler. And so that's who they're used to. And so it's going to be wonderful, yes.
Providing a little extra flair, we connected with Arnold Asham, manager and promoter of the Asham Stompers over in Winnipeg, who gives us a little summary on the history of the Red River Jig.
The Red River Jig was invented right here at the city of Winnipeg and at the forks of the Red and Assiniboine Rivers in the early 1800s to attract the fur traders into the colony to trade furs. These fur traders used to go whipping down the river with their dog sleds laden with furs, and they wouldn't stop at the Métis colony. So these Métis people developed this dance. They went down to the river and did the dance. The fur traders stopped for a few minutes, turned into a few hours, turned into an overnight, a weekend, and eventually turned into a 10-day festival that lasted for over 100 years. So the Red River Jig is very important in the formation of Manitoba and Confederation in general and the fur trade.
So when I'm listening to this music and I'm watching this dance and I feel like, you know, I want to dance and I want to party, that's kind of the whole point, isn't it? It's created this way
exactly.
By design.
And these fur traders, the French and the Irish and the English, they all loved this Red River Jig, and they would come back year after year, and the Métis people would dance almost all night till dawn in the morning, and it wasn't unusual to wear out a pair of moccasins in one evening.
So bring an extra pair of shoes, maybe.
So I go over all that in every show we do.
Right.
That's why it sounds like I got it memorized, and I have. Not memorized, but, you know, I've done it so many times, it just comes natural.
You've taken this dance troupe overseas to perform, is that right?
We have, yes. We've performed in Scotland and Shetland Islands and Edinburgh, and we've been to Mexico twice, Zacatecas and Little Charlotte. We've been to Northwest Territories, the Olympics in Vancouver, so that's as far west as you can go, and then the Festival of Colors in Cape Breton. You know, we've also done quite a few down south. You know, we danced at the World Curling Championships in Fargo.
Oh,
but we've
cool.
done other stuff down there as well. And I also own and operate Asham Curling Supplies. We've been in business 45 years, and we're worldwide, so if there's any curlers in Prince, they will probably decide to come out and see us. Okay?
Yeah. Well, we can't wait to have you in Prince George. Safe travels.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Now back to Sylvia Desrochers and Denise Porter at the new Prince George Métis Community Association office off Queensway.
So they're coming all the way from Manitoba. 15 people is an impressive number of artists to gather all together on one bus and head all the way out to Prince George. And is this part of a greater tour? Are they going to be visiting other destinations, or is Prince George the solo trip?
Well, I believe a couple years ago they were in Golden, so that was the first one in BC. But they do want to travel in BC, and especially in the north, because they haven't ever been here. So this is probably the start of that.
So this is the first time this group has come to Prince George. This event doesn't happen very often. Am I right about that?
No. I have been here since 1963, and I don't have a memory of any other group this size coming to this, to Prince George. And the Asham Stompers have been all over the world. But they've never been to northern BC. So this is their chance to come and visit and give us some excitement and a taste of who they are. It's wonderful, yeah.
This is actually a landmark moment.
It is, and we're excited. Well, we're too old to be excited, but we're but we're excited for our people, because we want our people to experience them. And hopefully that'll help to make our culture, you know, our culture that has been lost, that will make it come alive again.
Yeah. So the office here at 2588 off Queensway in town is a fairly new location for the society, for Prince George Métis Community Association. What brought about that change? Why did you feel it was important to establish a new location, a new office here in historic Fort George?
Well, prior to this, we've been downtown in an office in a basement with no windows. It was not accessible. And so we looked for a place where we could gather that our elders, and especially our elders and our disabled, could access. And we found this place, and we liked South Fort George area, because when I first came here in 1963, South Fort George was a large community of Métis. And so it's just like coming home.
To you okay, too, this to be able belong. To bring this, this into started, Prince George and experience it so here it's for the first time. I'm sure you know you've witnessed Métis, traditional Métis dance throughout your lives in various locations and various sizes, but this is a new scale, and you're bringing it here to Prince George. You said that this is really important for youth to be able to access it and just our community at large. What's in it for you? Are you getting anything personal out of it?
You know, I've been going to places like Batoche for years, and the atmosphere there is so community-minded people, and the entertainment is amazing. You know, I didn't know that there were so many good entertainers out there. And they would bring our culture alive. And so to bring it here to Prince George, that is my goal, is to excite people a little bit and say, hey, I'm proud of this, and I'm proud to be Métis. And this is my culture, and this is part of it, and we're so much fun. You know, if you just get to know us a little bit, then you'd realize that we are our own distinct culture. We are all our own distinct nation. We are a part of the indigenous people. It's like, okay, we're not invisible anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we can actually say that we're proud to be Métis nowadays. And this is who we are, and this is a part of us, and we want to share ourselves with you, with all of you. And it's not just the First Nations here, it's for all of the cultures that are here. Mm-hmm. Because when you study all the cultures, there's a lot of similarities, and one of them is the music and the dance. And so we just want to share ourselves. Awesome. That's all. Yeah.
And what venue is this happening at? Where can people get tickets?
Primarily at the Playhouse Theater. So they will be doing a performance, which is an interactive performance, meaning that people are invited to come up on stage and learn to jig. That will be Friday night. So that is the 23rd at the Playhouse from 6 until 7. We're hoping to have some kind of ticket system going because it does seat, I believe, 295 people. So our office, of course, here is at 2588 Queensway, but we are open on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. I will add the phone number, though. So it is 236-423-3455.
They will be performing on Friday, which is with the school division students. And so they will be in Vanier Hall first, PGSS.
And then Dutchess Park.
And then Dutchess Park.
But that is not open to the public. That'll be for our school kids, but on the Friday during the day. Mm-hmm. Open to the public, of course, at the Playhouse on Friday night, though. Then again, the Ashram Stompers will be performing again on the Saturday, the 24th, at 11 o'clock, starting at 11, and then there'll be another performance again at 1 o'clock that day. We hope to culminate this with a dinner and dance, which unfortunately will not be free, but the tickets will only be $20, so that will be held at the Kinsman Place this year. So that'll be, we're really looking forward to that as well. And then a final performance, Clinatene Park, Saturday morning around 10:30. And that will be the last time you will be able to see the Ashram Stompers for this go-around anyways, for this event. Yeah.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM.
This is a CGY News Update. A beloved downtown enamel music festival is reimagining Backyard Fest after almost being canceled last year. After running for almost 10 years, in 2024, fans of Backyard Fest got some shocking news a little over a month before that year's festival. The festival posted on social media that the backyard venue had been deemed unsafe by the city of Nanaimo and fire department officials. That meant the festival would not be able to run that year. But then, the festival run in the backyard of downtown record store Sound Heritage posted to social media that the festival once again was running that year. The organizers of Backyard Fest told CHY at the time they were given the okay to host the music festival in 2024, but were told that unless upgrades were made to the venue to align with fire and safety protocols, the festival could not continue to run in the beloved backyard. While the organizers made plans to upgrade the venue following the festival in 2024, it was clear those upgrades would not be done by the May long weekend in 2025. Knowing how important the festival is to the local indie and alternative music scene, organizers worked hard to find a new way for the music festival to continue in 2025. So while the backyard was unusable this year, Jack Proctor and Brennan Holm worked to create a new fill-in music festival called Sunk City. Proctor and Holm are this year's co-organizers of the music festival. Holm says while the backyard space is taking on new upgrades, they decided to host the music festival at various locations in the heart of downtown Nanaimo.
So we decided to step outside and go out into like the many venues that are on Victoria Crescent, such as the Queens, the Terminal, the Vault Cafe. We're going to build a big stage down here at Lois Lane that will have food and drinks and will still be all ages and all these things. And so, yeah, we're kind of spreading out and making it more of a multi-venue music festival over 3 nights and 2 days.
He says the name Sunk City came from brainstorming ideas and realizing that Lois Lane is one of the lowest locations in the downtown. Lois Lane is at or below sea level.
And I think we were just tossing around different ideas, like, okay, well, we're not going to be in the backyard. Let's think of something different. And one, you know, Lois Lane is being probably the lowest place in downtown in Nanaimo, being basically at sea level, and yeah, many sort of empty and void spaces that have been left in these areas down here. And so it's kind of fun just to play on that and being like, well, this is the place that we are, and let's name that.
Lois Lane is located off Terminal Avenue or down the China Steps from Victoria Crescent, where Hub City Cycles Co-op, Dealer's Choice, the Chamber Recording Studio, and the office and studio of CHY 101.7 FM are located. Proctor says this year they will continue offering the same great music the festival always has. There will be many local performances, as well as visiting bands and acts from across Canada and the United States. She says it was important for them when creating Sunk City to keep the venues located around Victoria Crescent, where Sound Heritage and the backyard is located.
Mostly just so, I mean, number one, this is where we live and play and work all the time, and so it feels really good to be down here. Number two, it's amazing how many venues there are so close together, and so bringing everyone out together to those places is awesome. And then you can be at the Vault and be like, you know what, I think I love this act, but maybe there's a better one down the street, and it's just a 1 minute walk away and you can go check it out.
She mentions that because there'll be performances at inside locations such as the Queens, they'll have some performances run late into the night.
That's a awesome benefit of going inside, is we can play music without disturbing all the neighbors.
Along with the musical performances, there will also be a local artisan market along Victoria Crescent on the Saturday. Both Holm and Proctor say that while it was extra work to create a whole new festival for Sunk City, instead of just canceling this year's Backyard Fest due to the upgrades, they did it because of how important this festival is for the community.
Yeah, I think ultimately we went back and forth and we're like, this event is awesome. It's like such a core component of Nanaimo's music scene, and it would be really sad not to do it again this year.
The Sunk City Music Festival will be happening this May long weekend from May 16th to the 18th. Tickets in the schedule can be found on backyardfest.ca. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, as part of ongoing efforts to understand climate change impacts on northern BC forests, the Ministry of Forest Research Program has initiated several field-based studies over the past 2 decades, including research in the Skeena region led by Vanessa Ford, research climatologist, covering topics such as lodgepole pine diseases, fire risk in different stand types, and alpine change. I attended Vanessa's presentation, hosted by the Bulkley Valley Research Center yesterday, then had a chance to break down some of the information with an interview and clips from her presentation. Here's Vanessa now.
My name is Vanessa Ford. I'm a research climatologist for the North Area for the BC Ministry of Forests.
So I just attended your seminar that the Bulkley Valley Research Center presented. So lots of information. And by asking this first question, I bet you it's a hard answer, but can you tell me
a little bit about what you actually do. I saw that you were talking about operating weather stations, but yeah, can you give me a kind of a slight overview of what you do with the Ministry of Forests?
Yeah, the Ministry of Forests has a pretty broad research program across the province, and we have a bunch of different discipline experts within that research program. There's currently three research climatologists across the entire province. So my focus is mainly Northern British Columbia, which is still a gigantic area. And half of what I do is what was in the presentation today with the Bulkley Valley Research Center, in that I'm conducting field-based research in forest climates to understand both climate change in Northern British Columbia broadly, but also the impacts of climate change to our forests and ecosystems. And then the other half of my job is really to be like a climate expert for both the ministry as well as sometimes government in terms of understanding climate change and the impacts of climate change more broadly, and then how to bring that into mitigation and adaptation activities and bringing climate change into resource management and decision making.
A portion of the presentation that you just gave was about blister rust on trees. So what does information about blister rust on trees tell us about or predict about weather patterns in Northern British Columbia?
I guess the concern was when we started the field-based monitoring was that pathologists and forest health experts and forest practitioners in general were noticing a lot of incidents of rusts on planted stands of lodgepole pine. These rusts are natural to the areas, but potentially our climate is becoming more favorable for those rusts to occur. And they are a concern because they can cause mortality of our trees that are in these plantations, which are our future forests and future timber supplies. So we wanted to initiate the climate and microclimate monitoring to really first understand what are the weather and climate conditions that relate to these rusts occurring on lodgepole pine and try to narrow down like specifics of those climate and weather conditions to be able to apply that more broadly across the landscape of BC's forests to highlight areas that might be at risk based on their current climate and weather patterns of higher likelihood of rust, or maybe in the future could be at risk of a higher likelihood of rust because of their changing climate conditions.
When we're talking about forest areas, people, I think, maybe either picture forests that are the most familiar to them, or they have a sort of an amorphous view of what forests are. But in your seminar, you're speaking about subboreal forest reporting from stations in open, mature, and juvenile spruce stands. So when you're looking at weather patterns or climate, kind of climate data, what are you learning about maybe specifically, because we're entering wildfire season, what data is surprising you about how fire acts in each of these ecosystems?
I think we're definitely still learning. So they're not spruce stands, they're just stands that are within that subboreal spruce ecosystem subtype. But yeah, lodgepole pine is what's been planted in the open stands as well as the juvenile stands. And then the mature stands would be a mixture of pine, spruce, subalpine fir, Douglas fir, and aspen, cottonwoods, birch. Yeah, just thought I would clarify that. That's okay. Yeah. And then I think what so far is most surprising to me is that the mature stands are potentially not as cool and wet as I would have assumed they would be. I think sometimes we think when we go into primary forest that it's often like dark and damp and it feels a lot cooler. So I was hoping that we would be able to pick out some larger differences than we have to date between the mature stand and the other stand types, but they're also quite patchy. So there can be large openings that would allow stands to dry up. But yeah, it's been pretty interesting to see those differences.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenai, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Good day.